Bad News is a popular guide that helps you make sense of the news wherever it appears in print, broadcast, or online. Peppered with examples from around the world, the book turns a serious subject into an enjoyable read. It is by Mark Pack. Delighted to be joining me live in the line from on the line from somewhere in the UK is Mark himself. Mark, good morning to you, sir.
Lovely to join you from a much less sunny location than you are in, I think.
Well, yes. Well, that's, you know, that's powerful. Whereabouts are you today, by the way, Mark?
North London. Dreary, rainy, making me think maybe I should emigrate, perhaps, somewhere sunnier.
Somewhere sunny. But then you wouldn't be at the hub, the nerve centre of all the news that you're reporting on. Why bad news, Mark?
Well, the title is a little bit of a pun, obviously, but the thing that is important, I think, for all of us to learn about the news, is it the news really loves unhappy stories and tragedies. There's this saying that if it bleeds, it leads. And good news, there's loads of good news out there in the world, tends not to make its way into the headlines. A classic example being that over the last decade, there's been huge progress in improving public health across all of Africa. Massive improvements in people's quality of life and life expectancy in many areas. But the things that hit the news headlines, the things that, you know, we'll get to the list of points for you to read out, are the tragedies. And so we often end up missing all the good news. And that actually can have quite an impact on our mental health if we're thinking the world is really as bad as the headlines tell us.
Well, especially now in this age of 24/7 social, I mean, not even sort of cable news, which dates me. I mean, I grew up with the CNN generation, etc. But if you look at the impact that social media has, and we have things like clickbait, where stories are, you know, you'll never believe what this celebrity's looks like, or so-and-so's tragic daughter story that's popping up on any news feed that you tend to be, no matter what platform you're on.
Yeah, and so one of the things my book takes you through is a few of the tricks to learn to decode some of those clickbait headlines. So a very simple one is, if the headline is a question, the answer is almost always no. So if you see a tweet, you know, news headline, is it true that X did whatever? The answer's no. You don't need to click through. You can save your time. But another one, which is a much more insidious one, is about quote marks. So, you know, any of us, say when we were at school, we'll have thought of quote marks where you've got, say, an essay and you quote the exact word of something. Quote marks are a sign of quality, but not in news headlines. If the person writing the news headline has put something in quote marks, what that really means is, you know what, I'm not sure this is true, and I'm just going to distance myself from it in case the libel lawyers come knocking. So if you see quote marks and a question mark, run a mile.
I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, what you basically want to do is you need to, I mean, I was going to say shift papers, and again, that shows my age, because I grew up in the age of hot metal as well. But, you know, there was always a thing when I was working, you know, back in the day, was the fact that if you put a picture of Diana, Princess of Wales on the front, it will shift papers, and it still does.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of the things I try and make clear in the book is, yeah, I don't want to go around blaming journalists, because journalists have to live with the dynamics of the fact that their audiences are often inadvertently encouraging, you know, poor reporting of news, because the bad news, the thing that features Princess Di, why is it that the Daily Star in the UK so often has nonsense stories about solar system catastrophes that are meant to befall the Earth in the near future? I don't think that any of the journalists writing those stories really believe a meteor is about to crash into the Earth tomorrow and wipe out the world. Because if they did, they probably wouldn't have spent the day going into their office to work. But it works for them. It gets them an audience. The audience gets them advertising revenue. Advertising revenue pays their salaries. So, but if we're at least aware of that slightly pernicious cycle, we can treat it with the skepticism and the humour that it deserves.
So, I mean, the thing is, you know, maybe I'm just being, you know, a naive fool here, and I've been called worse in my life. But surely the business of news is to report what you see, or what you know, you go forth and you know, get three news sources behind you, etc., before you report on it. So why do you think that the way that we currently gather news is perhaps not suited to the 21st century?
Well, let's give an example. The big trial at the moment in Spain on the ex-police chief for sort of blackmail and corruption. And so I thought, you know, yes, this morning I thought, well, let's just make sure, you know, I'm up to date. Has there been a big breaking news story in Spain or something? And so the BBC's got a big story. And it's a good, well-written, ticks all the boxes about responsible journalism. Except the problem is the story has appeared at the beginning of the trial. So the story basically has given me the case for the prosecution. And, you know, It'll be over the future weeks and months, maybe even depending how long the court case takes, that we'll hear in detail the case for the defence. So you can, the fact that we, news has to be fresh. You know, no journalist is going to say to their editor, give me 4 months, I'll come back and write the story after the court case is concluded. So that rush to report what's happening now, when actually the truth can take time to emerge, is a big problem.
And also that particular case is very, very glamorous, because it's got all the thing about, you know, spying on politicians. It's got some TV personalities there. One of the defendants, she is the person behind the developer, which has an exclusive development in Madrid that Ronaldo bought a place in. So it's all those glamorous sort of boxes. Yeah. Isn't it?
It's a Netflix future drama series, isn't it? There's probably people already filing plans to dramatize it. And that's exactly the point. All of that stuff, that's what's going to stick in our memory. That's what we'll still half remember in 5 years or 10 years' time. I've got no idea how good or bad the defense is in this case, but what the defense lawyers say in 2 weeks' time in court will get hardly any attention. And it's that imbalance that we want, the thing that's new, the thing that's dramatic. But life isn't always made up of just things that are new and dramatic.
You've mentioned, you know, you want something new. How much do you think that we are suffering in terms of news gathering, in terms of just get it out there? Get it there. Because before, you know, there was that you would, again, showing my age, you'd go to the nearest phone box and you'd file your copy into a copy taker who sat at the other end of the thing. And that was the way you got your copy in, by a certain time, hopefully before the pubs closed, although they were still open. But that was the way that you did. That was the way that you did shoe leather and journalism. And again, I'm showing my age. These days, because of the way that social media works, and especially with Twitter, it is a case of get it out there first, and then we can retract it later if it's all gone horrible. Pear-shaped.
Yeah, that is a real problem. That rush means that there's even less time to check or get context. There is an upside, though, which is it also makes it a lot easier for other people to expose errors and problems in stories. So, you know, I find it really useful if there is a story that's maybe a lot of controversy over, you can go to Twitter, you can do a search, filter a bit to, you know, filter out some of the weirder corners of Twitter, but you can see what other experts on the story or on the topic are saying about the story. And so if there's a story that is a front page in the Daily Telegraph, but it's about a topic where a whole load of experts are rubbishing the story, in the old world, you'd have probably never discovered that unless you happen to personally know one of those experts. These days, you can very easily find that on social media. So some swings to go with the roundabouts.
Yeah, but it is quite difficult, isn't it, to sort out the wheat from the chaff, and the, you know, the peripheral tweetings and twitterings and experts and people running off with, you know, if there is, for example, we've had some horrendous wildfires down in this particular corner of Spain recently, and there have been various, as they broke out, there were various reports of people being trapped when they weren't, people being arrested when they weren't, you know, huge marijuana plantations going up in flames when they weren't, because obviously the farmer would have been a bit affected by that. But, you know, and that all comes in. And whenever something like this happens, people sort of pile in with their opinions. It's very difficult when we are all our own editors, Mark.
Yeah, and I remember when there were the riots in London a few years back now, there was a whole, I mean, it was a very cunningly done hoax, but a whole set of hoax messages that started spreading about how animals had escaped from London Zoo. And it just had that bit of credibility. Yeah. But then when you take a step back, you think, are there really tigers roaming the streets of central London? Maybe not, maybe not. And so, yeah, it's very easy to fall foul of that. But that's why we need a bit of scepticism and sometimes just take a step back and think, you know what? Maybe I'll wait a day or two before deciding what I really think on this.
So, I mean, how do we then? You say, is it time? Is it taking that step back? Is it taking that pause then about what may flash up on your news feed, be it whilst you're watching, you know, the Sky News or whatever, News 24, whatever you happen to be watching, or is it a case of, right, let's, before I go for this one hook, line and sinker, let's check out some more sources to make my own opinion, to get my own idea of what's actually happening out there?
Well, the slightly convoluted culinary analogy I use at the end of the book is to treat the news like chocolate. So chocolate is great. It gives you a lovely short-term rush. It gives you a buzz. It's fun. A life without chocolate would be dull and boring and worse. But it shouldn't be the only food you consume. And so I think there's lots to be said about following the news headlines each day. But you need to mix in with that. For example, podcasts, if you like listening to podcasts, are a brilliant way of often getting a much more reflective take on the news. Because if you've got a weekly podcast on a topic, it's often reporting the news a few days in arrears. And so there's more time for context, more time to hear the other side, more time to check out the facts. So leaving the chocolate rush of the news headlines each day with the slower moving broccoli podcast. I fear I've dumbed down podcasts there by comparing them with broccoli. Broccoli is a lovely... It's a lovely food, I should add.
It is indeed, and wonderful with the hummus dip, etc. There you go. Culinary currently quotes at 10:45 on a Thursday morning. What more do you need from a radio station? Why did you decide then that it was important, or the time was right to put all this down in bad news?
I'd sort of over the years accumulated a series of little shortcuts or rules of thumb myself to try and decode the news. And I thought, actually, some of these, feature in other, really good books other people have written. But I thought there's quite a lot here. Like this point about quote marks, that if you see a quote mark in a headline, basically it means the person writing the headline doesn't really believe it's necessarily true. There's quite a lot of stuff like that actually nobody has ever, at least that I had found, had written down. So I thought, okay, well, if I think this is useful and someone else hasn't written it down, let's see if other people will find it useful for me to write it down.
Did it? I mean, obviously, you have this information you gathered together over years. Did it, when you finish something like this, do you have a sort of sanguine view of news gathering whenever you look at the tome that you've put together and you think, sometimes we really should have a proper look? And do you not get a little bit sort of cynical about the whole news gathering operation?
Yeah, well, I think the way I view the news after having sort of finished writing the book is to view it a bit like a foreign language. You have to put some work into understanding it, and that's the real thing. But it's presented in a way like it feels like you can just take it on a plate, but actually, if you put in a bit of work to understand it, if you leaven your chocolate with your broccoli, then bingo.
Now, why should we, and I'm just thinking of some sort of broccoli chocolate sort of dish.
I'm giving you a tough challenge.
I'll tell you, that's a starter from hell, that is. Why should we read the Daily Mail backwards? Because that made me chuckle. Now, we're not talking from the sports pages that way. I mean, till you get to the front page where, you'll find Jan Muir going about how she feels at 60-something or other. But what is the raison d'etre behind that one, Mark? Yeah.
So there's a real trick to reading stories in the Daily Mail, which is the headline is the outrage designed to grab your attention. And by the time you get to the last paragraph, that's where the truth is slipped in that keeps the libel lawyers and the press regulators happy. And so once you know this trick, it's remarkable the number of Daily Mail stories where the last paragraph basically says the story above is mostly not true. Or the story above is mostly one side's allegations. There's a whole other side we haven't reported. But once you start seeing it, it's a bit like if you've never noticed the adverts for watches and clocks, it's almost always that the watch face shows you the time of being about 10 to 2 or 10 to 3.
Right.
And once you start noticing that that's where the hands always are, you see it everywhere. Same with the Daily Mail. Once you start noticing that last paragraph tells you the rest of the story was a bit rubbish, a bit not quite true, you notice it everywhere.
Other newspapers are available, obviously. I just want to pop that in there. And finally, because I am renowned in these parts as the cat dad of Spain, and I get sent mugs, and I get sent t-shirts and sweatshirts, and thank you very much, with Christmas coming up as well, get the orders in early to avoid supply and demand. Why should we? Because if I see a story of a cat, then obviously because of my genetics, my pre-programming, I am drawn to it. Why should we be wary of, the feline on page 5?
Yeah, well, there's a fantastic example of this from a few years ago about the cat who was supposedly summoned to jury duty in the US. And it is just too good. It's just too absurd a story for anyone to be able to resist running it. And of course, when you dig into the details, it turns out it wasn't anything like the headline makes it sound like. And actually, those idiot government bureaucrats who summoned a cat for jury duty actually were doing the right thing in the circumstances. So stories with cute animals, just, it's almost like they make us let our guard down. And we sort of think, yeah, of course humans behave really stupidly, rather than say, you know what, maybe we're just being conned about something with a cute photo in it.
Absolutely. The book The book is called Bad News. It is by Mark. If people want to find out more information about this or about any other of your stories, including 101 Ways to Win an Election, which we'll talk about, I don't know, I might talk to you about that off air. Where can they find you? I know there's a website because I'm looking at it right now, my friend.
Absolutely. If you go to markpack.org.uk or Google my name, it's a relatively rare name, so you'll probably find the right Mark Pack. The Dr. Mark Pack, who used to be on the run from the FBI in the US, I should hasten to add, isn't me.
Right.
But most of the other Mark Packs you'll find online are me.
Although, if you were that, you could actually hold up a picture of a cute cat to sort of get them away from that.
Absolutely.
What particular one then, really, to leave them with a laugh, Mark, which particular story then, or bad news story, do you think really, really sort of encapsulates, apart from obviously the chocolate and broccoli combination that I'm going to be, the quiche maybe, that I'm thinking about composing in the break. What story do you think is the one that made you really sort of want to read it backwards or not look at a cute animal for a long time afterwards?
Well, it doesn't quite fit your bill, but there was a fantastic set of stories a few months ago about how a new generation of people watching the Friends TV, comedy drama show, were being appalled at the social attitudes that were shown in that. And, there's a genuine fact that a lot of our attitudes have changed since the first episode of Friends appeared. But when you scratched under the surface, it was about half a dozen people tweeting. And you think, I'm not sure a national newspaper running a big splash story based on half a dozen random people online really should count. But I think chapeau to those half dozen people who managed to set a global media story going with probably some rather off-the-cuff comments whilst watching an old Friends episode on Netflix.
And plus it gave a load of sub-editors and whatever and did page designers the chance to put, the excuse to put Jennifer Aniston on the thing as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This book is called Bad News, What the Headlines Don't Tell Us. It's by Mark Pack. It is excellent. Go check it out. Mark, thank you so much for your time today.
Lovely to be with you. Thank you.